Welcome to Sacred Realms, a podcast where a rabbi, a pastor, and a Bible scholar discuss the nexus of science fiction, fantasy, religion, and spirituality. This episode is a What's Happening in the Realm episode, where we will answer the question of the month, talk about what we have been watching or reading lately, talk about news from the science fiction, fantasy, religion news sphere, and then pull something out from the Geniza, something from way back in our past that's still worth dusting off and talking about. We are Rabbi Andrew Pepperstone,
Pastor Travis Smith McKee,
Matthew Umberger,
and this is Sacred Realms. This month's question of the month is inspired by our The Sacred episode about the Revenge of the Sith. Tell us about a moment when you experienced real inner turmoil.
When have I been Anakin?
When have you been Anakin, but hopefully did not turn to the dark side? Just experience the turmoil that Anakin clearly felt.
You know, it's interesting to me where I come at on this. It relates to a couple of times within my own ministry where people who are often the ones who try to bring about change are not often appreciated. And so I find myself in times where, you know, I'm leaving a space with quickness. It's just kind of like my time here, the connection has been broken, whatever it looks like. And it's interesting to me because at those moments, for a lot of people my age, for a lot of people in my experience, that's been their break-off point with church in general. They are done with what church has to offer. And yet, I have found myself still finding value in the community of faith, in the comfort of scriptures, and in the devotion to the scriptures as well. But the inner pain, the inner turmoil, is absolutely something that I see where it leads people to make bigger decisions than what I've made. I see where it's led people to say, like, okay, I'm done with this, or I don't have patience to wait for change to happen. And you know, we bring this up, and I've actually had a couple of conversations with people about it here in the last few days. Just how do you stay part of your faith community when you've experienced real hurt and loss within that? Do you have the patience to see change happen, or do you overreact to something more? And so I think that has something to do with a lot of where I see Anakin's turmoil happening.
I think for me, I really experienced the turmoil with couples who are getting married, and one of the person is Jewish and one is not. In particular, where the person who is Jewish in the couple is a serious, committed Jewish person. Jewish life is important to them. They want to have Jewish kids. They want to have a Jewish home. And the person that they love and are getting married to happens not to be Jewish and is even supportive of and encouraging of being a Jewish household, raising their children, should they have children, as Jews, and still being unable to be with them at every step along the way. I can be with them for a lot of steps along the way. I cannot do the marriage. I would literally be removed from my rabbinical association. I can now attend intermarriage ceremonies, but I cannot perform them. And the turmoil of wanting to bring families close to the community, close to Jewish life, and close to God is impeded by the standard, which I believe in, which is in not doing these kind of marriages. But then how do you get this kind of couple to engage in Jewish life if you tell them we're with you all the way except for that one thing? So there's a lot of turmoil and tears shed over this tension between wanting to bring people close but being told to keep people a little still like a little bit of a push away. And right now this is like the biggest issue facing my denomination is, and you know, people say, you know, once we do this, you know, we will go down the dark side forever. Will it dominate our destiny? Oh, I mean, they say this will change everything forever and it will be an undoable change, which I think is correct. So the question is it right or wrong to do so? And I feel the turmoil, my denomination feels the turmoil, and this will be the decision whether we do or don't change. It will really determine the course of my entire movement in many ways.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big one. So lots of turmoil. This is the issue of my generation.
Wow. Huh. For me, I think this is maybe a lot more personal. I'm a professor at Newman University, so I have a very modest salary. And I think, you know, there are times when I've struggled to support my family. I see I'm not giving the family as much as maybe I feel like they should have, like they deserve. And that wounds me as a husband and a father. And I find sometimes I'm tempted to take drastic measures to fix that situation. Mm. That's when I feel like Anakin, I think.
Mm.
I have those, you know, waking up in the middle of the night with these, you know, force nightmares that, yeah, that kind of existential dread of how am I going to make this work? And really feeling that, like, there was a time not too long ago, I saw some job opportunities elsewhere and they were very attractive, but realizing that taking my wife and I and taking our family that's still with us out of Wichita would be disruptive to the broader family. My older kids are settling down here. My parents are aging. After I'd made the decision to stay here, I had that sense of, oh, that was a close one. That was a real temptation to pursue good things, but also, to be honest, to be selfish, to further my career, my own, rather than thinking of what's best for everyone, to gain power, right? I wanted power over my situation.
And control, and too.
Yep.
Padme won't die if you do these things.
We actually left Syracuse, New York, and did it because Paul and I decided that her career needed to continue elsewhere.
Uh-huh.
And so we took the plunge and thankfully ended up in Wichita.
Yeah.
But we had to uproot everybody from school and friends and drag them to a city they had never seen before in the middle of COVID.
So, and I'm sure that was painful.
It was. But being here for COVID was also good in many ways for a lot of reasons. And in the end, they've liked where we landed.
In your situations, have you experienced those, that angst as temptations? Is it like that sense of, like, you can make a decision that might pay off with more personal power over your situation, control, or you can, you know, take a more virtuous, painful path, or is it just...
Staying in Syracuse would have been an easier path, and leaving was the harder path. So it was, there was temptation to stay, but it would have been very self-centered temptation.
Mm-hmm.
And so looking at my family's needs on the whole, we made the decision to simply trust the universe that we land okay.
Yeah.
So as clergy always have to do, because it isn't like we get the job, then we say, hey, we're leaving. If we say, hey, we're leaving, then we look for something else.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, it's always that, like, and then COVID made that even more complicated. And grateful that Wichita said yes.
My daughter was getting ready to start kindergarten, but this was at the end of COVID era. I started January 2020 in a small town outside of Wichita that, you know, in the 2 years / it felt like a decade of COVID, church is having to make every decision that you've never had to make.
Yeah.
And many social, you know, 2020 to 2022 was very famous for being politically not charged, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. So, I mean,
everyone,
all those...
on the same page, the whole
everybody,
time.
Everybody. It was really easy to get along. So, I mean, in many ways, we were thankful that our time was ending there because of the intensity of what had been. But also, my wife had a good job here in Wichita. My sister lived in Wichita. My parents, you know, were needing more help. And so I needed to make a decision that included them. And so we made a decision to stay in Wichita. So we came from that small town into Wichita itself, and we're going to try to make that work. I didn't know what my next step would be, but it ended up being, I was an interim pastor at a church for a while. doing much of the work that I am doing now, working with transforming churches and stuff like that, but none of that felt guaranteed. Can I make it work? I had my CDL still at the time, so I thought, like, could I be a bus driver? My first job was in teaching, so could I go back and be a substitute teacher? Or some of those sort of things that still gave me the flexibility. And so I was willing to do what I could to protect my family. And, you know, I think after, if it had been a couple of years of that, that would have changed some of those temptations. I see that temptation sort of thing where I'm not living out my own call,
right,
but I'm doing what I can to stay for my family. And so finding a place that does both has really been, it's been rewarding personally for me, but also I had to have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case.
So watching Revenge of the Sith with you, that was what I took away from this viewing was, that seems very real to me, that crisis of wanting to control the future and feeling like you're like in desperation and you don't really have a choice. This is the only thing you have to do. There's always a choice.
I think about Hayden Christensen's acting choices in the moment when he actually turns. And he's just like weary, tired. It's like, fine.
That's true.
Fine. Like, okay, just save Padme. Like, whatever. Whatever you want.
Exactly.
He just surrenders, kind of like emotionally exhausted. Yeah. I mean, he just learned that his mentor is a Sith Lord, that Padme, he's been dealing with Padme's looming death, and the Jedi have basically, he now sees the Jedi in a whole new light, which is not inaccurate. Yeah. The Jedi are not good. So he's just like, oh, weary, like, fine.
So one of the critiques has been that a lot of people think it happens too quickly.
It does.
And it was a little scary how much I related with it this time.
I think I'm glad that Hayden Christensen has gotten a lot of new appreciation for his role in episodes 2 and 3, especially after Ahsoka came out, where he did some really lovely Anakin of the Clone War era stuff and the recordings he made for her. Those are really, really nice. Yeah. Those are really cool to make those. And it's like the Anakin that we knew from the Clone Wars, who is not young and immature, who is not evil. It was like the adult Anakin that we actually kind of like, that we really enjoyed seeing on screen. Like, Anakin at his best. And it was nice seeing him play Anakin at his best. Nice to,
I agree.
But seeing him, it was very relatable in that eventual turn. Not all of a sudden. Right, but I remember the critique that it was so fast.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Not at all. Great answer to a great question. So, what have we been watching and or reading or imbibing in some way lately? I've been watching quite a bit. I manage to burn the candle at both ends sometimes and take in perhaps more than I should.
That's our number one. You can think of this as like Venn diagrams of what have we watched, and there's a lot of overlap
amongst
many of them. But Andor being the first of that, burning the candle at both ends, the release schedule of that was brutal.
I decided to go with the brutal release schedule and committed myself to very late Tuesday nights for a month just to watch all 3 episodes each week at the blistering pace at which they were released. And I got to say, it was a good release schedule. The burst of 3, 3, 3, 3.
Would you watch them all 3 in one night?
I watched all 3 on Tuesday night, the release day. Like I said, not that it was the healthiest sleep choice to me. But as far as like experiencing the narratives, because they are 3 episode arcs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 3 episodes are set in year 4, 3, 2, and 1, BBY, the battle, before the Battle of Yavin. Or Yavin. They said it differently. That threw me off.
Yavin.
No. Not Tay State in Kansas. Yavin.
It depends on which planet you come from, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's your Coruscant accent speaking right there. Okay, yeah.
If you're Lonnie or Luthen, you say Yavin, I guess. If you're from Coruscant, you say Yavin. If you're from the States, you say Yavin. Yes, if you're on like Tatooine, you say Yavin. Yeah. We'll do an Andor episode, I'm sure, at some point. But it was so amazing to see, like, the theme of sacrifice play out. Like, what everybody was willing to sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Luthen in season 1 sacrificed, as he said, everything in one of the best speeches of all time in Star Wars. You remember that speech? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. That episode has some of just the best monologue. It's the same one as One Way Out. Same episode. Though there are separate episodes. There's three monologues in season one. There's One Way Out, Luthen's speech with Lonnie, and then Marva's eulogy, where Tony Gilroy said, "We're going to say F the Empire." And Lizzie said, "Please don't do that." And they recorded it, F the Empire, but dubbed it Fight the Empire. If you look at her mouth, you can see they made her eulogy video F the Empire, and then they dub over it Fight. Because T and K look different on screen. So they got both in. And there's some amazing monologues in season two. But seeing how what price everybody is willing to do, what they're willing to sacrifice for, whether it's the Empire or the Rebellion, was fascinating. Everyone sacrifices something. Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil it for you, Matthew, but everyone has to give up something.
Yeah.
No one comes out of that unscathed. And it was some truly amazing writing, some truly amazing acting.
I've gotten to the part where the wedding, where Mon Mothma has to... Are we giving spoilers?
No.
We're still dancing with her.
It's over. Yeah. It's out there.
Where she sacrifices her good friend, Tay.
Oh, Tay.
And then she gets drunk.
Like her mother.
And dances.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was...
And her daughter is ostensibly sacrificed to their... Yeah. Which is their arcane marriage system of letting kids marry at a very young age.
Yeah.
To a boy who won't hold her hand.
Yeah.
Because he's either immature or doesn't want to, or who knows why. Very sad seeing Leda go into this, hopefully not loveless marriage, but at least at the moment, an affectionless marriage.
Yeah.
But she did to get the money to cover up her banking issues to keep funding the Rebellion. Yeah. That's her sacrifice. Oh my God.
And who gets put on those sacrifices as well?
I always think about Second Temple siege of the Romans in terms of rebellions against an empire. That's kind of like our archetype of, you know, how do you fight an empire?
Mm.
And I think about accelerationists because they accuse Luthen of being an accelerationist. And he said, yes, that's my point. He wants the Empire to get hit and then to react, create more fight. And they were the accelerationists among the Jews in Judea at that time. And they're the ones who were like pushing for the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And they burned the food stores in Jerusalem to make the siege end faster, thinking it would go their way. It did not. And the rabbis were very much accommodationist. Like, let's just, like, escape and save what we can and let the rest burn and we'll restart somewhere else. Very, like, Jedi surviving Order 66 in some ways, in my mind.
Hmm.
But definitely, I think about, of course, the rebels actually succeed in Star Wars. They actually will take down the Empire.
Yeah.
They will blow up their big weapon. And it will last for approximately... not that long till the New Order shows up. And then they have a big weapon. And then they get taken down. And then what's next? Who knows? Yeah. But like the cycle of just like perpetual, you know, fighting against these large imperial forces over and over again, to me just rings true of Jewish history. Always dealing with the next empire and the next empire and the next empire.
So what's the correct approach?
Well, I'm a rabbinic Jew. We chose the approach of live to fight another day and of accommodation to an empire. So the rabbis are accommodationists.
The rabbis say that the temple was destroyed for lack of love, right?
The second temple.
The second,
yes, baseless hatred.
Baseless hatred.
Yes, lack of love. Sinat chinam. Like people who were just being spiteful to each other for no good reason. They tell about... there's a very famous, a very wealthy man in Jerusalem who's having a party at his home, and he wants to invite a man named Kamsa, and instead Bar Kamsa is invited by mistake, his mortal enemy, and Bar Kamsa arrives, and the host says, "What are you doing here? Get out." And Bar Kamsa says, "Don't embarrass me, let me stay, I'll pay for my own food." And the host says, "No, get out." Bar Kamsa says, "I'll pay for half the party." And the host refuses. And then, "I'll pay for the entire party. Do not kick me out. It will be mortifying." And the host says, "No, get out." And the rabbis say in this version that the rabbis said nothing. That there were sages in the room who hear, and they do not intervene. Bar Kamsa leave, he is bitter, he goes to the emperor, he says, the Jews are going to rebel against you. Emperor says, that's ridiculous, how do you know? He said to them, I know they are, send a calf as an offering. If they sacrifice the calf, they're good. If they refuse, they're rebelling. So Bar Kamsa takes the calf, puts a very small blemish in the eye that would have been okay for a Roman sacrifice, not okay for a temple-based sacrifice. The high priest sees the blemish and knows exactly the conundrum he is in, which is that if he doesn't sacrifice it, it's war. If he does sacrifice it, he gives up on his own principles about what's a worthy sacrifice, and he decides to not make the sacrifice. So because of the hatred of the host against Bar Kamsa, this leads to the all-out war and ultimately the destruction of Jerusalem and the burning of the temple. So this is the story the rabbis tell about themselves, and they're complicit with letting it happen. So that they're critical of their own role in not intervening in this horrible story. Whether the story is true or not doesn't really matter, but like the rabbis say, this kind of hatred, which we allowed to exist, is why the temple was destroyed.
But
The Trade Federation ships were very donut shaped.
I mean,
and the Death Star is like a big donut hole.
So it all goes together, Chewbacca.
But what I appreciate about this is, like, we've been talking about where different forms of media have come. Matthew and I have shared just our experiences in the Christian music realm in many ways. And so we, just in our own curiosity, you know, there's a practical realm to where that is. And then, you know, we've been asking if there's an analog in whatever the word is, if there's a parallel in the Jewish culture to the Christian music scene, if you will, or something like that, or Christian film as going on there. And I think what's interesting about just our conversation here with the Second Temple and all these other sort of things is, like, we're finding where these themes do overlap. And I think that really does, you know, highlight and emphasize just a lot of where these decisions and where these, you know, consequences are outside of just, you know, here's one-to-one comparisons. We really do see just a lot of the tension in those stories that come along. Yeah. I listened to a podcast yesterday called Song Exploder. This is it explores how somebody wrote a song, and Danny Elfman, who was a member of Oingo Boingo in the 80s, but also has become known as a composer for films and things like that.
He was talking television. Yeah. The Simpsons theme song is one of his most famous compositions.
But he's talking about The Nightmare Before Christmas and What's This and how he started writing it. And a lot of What's This is reflecting in his own turmoil over leaving his band, and yet also, like, he's finding another relationship and stuff like that that comes from it. And so anytime you get to a songwriter, I mean, obviously a songwriter limits their timing, but also, you know, filmmakers and everybody else like that are not going to sit there for a 20-hour presentation of every thought that's going on behind it. Where those influences come out and the more universal truths that they can speak, I think, is really neat.
You know, as a former Californian, I thought everybody had heard of Oingo Boingo.
Oh.
Turns out, not so much. Most people have not heard of Oingo Boingo.
My 21-year-old son is a huge Oingo Boingo fan.
Really?
You know, my daughter also. We just went through some of my old CDs. She has a new car with a CD player. And two albums that she took were Boingo Alive, which is their in-studio re-recording of all their greatest hits.
Oh, cool.
They actually recorded everything live in studio rather than just reissue the old recordings on a best of. So she took those two in particular. Asked permission because knows how much I love them as well. Yeah, they're a great band.
Oh, yeah.
They were definitely rock with a lot of horn. You know, one of my regrets is not seeing them live. Mm. And I had many opportunities to do so. Friend said, hey, do you want to go see Oingo Boingo? I said, nah, like a chump. Should have done it. Yeah. Travis, you and I have been watching The Last of Us, season 2. It has been very gut-wrenching to watch.
Yeah.
And I immediately thought of, while watching even season 1, season 2, the following teaching from Pirkei Avot, which is in a place where there is no humanity, strive to be a human. That's a paraphrase of the teaching. But that certainly made me think about that show. You know, when you're surrounded by so much inhumanity, how do you actually retain your humanness, your humanity? And that show feels like a very long meditation upon that question.
For certain, I mean, there's the very obvious themes of revenge. When you feel wronged, does somebody else feel righted in that? Or is somebody else also reacting to the wrongs that have gone on in their own lives? And so, you know, season three will continue that exploration. There is a season three. They are filming it right now. And it ends with a very obvious, like, nod to season three is going to be from Abby's perspective, which is pretty contrasted to Ellie's perspective in many of the notable deaths and motivations for the revenge that end up happening in Last of Us. But, you know, again, that I think that is really the case of what the show is so centered around, you know, people who are infected by cordyceps. And so they have lost their humanity in many ways, or they're about to.
So there's one scene where somebody has been bitten by a stalker, infected, and it's right in between the being bitten and losing your humanity, and he makes that last request. And do you trust someone who's on the precipice of losing humanity, honor their last human request? And Ellie and Joel give you the responsibility differently. Ellie feels more responsible to honor the flickering out light of their humanity, and Joel thinks of the greater good and thinks of the community.
And it really gets into what is the greater good of it, but also it's that reductionist thing of if you are infected, you are no longer human. If you're not infected, then you're human. But that also starts going to if you are shooting at us, you're not human in that same, you are an enemy automatically. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are coming from outside of the gates of our community that we have been trying to keep safe, if you are coming from outside of that, are you being seen as a refugee or are you being seen as an enemy? And that humanity stuff, you know, continues to go along right there of, you know, can you view the stranger at the door? Can you view the one who needs that help? In the Christian scriptures of the parable of the Good Samaritan, can you view somebody who you've been told to treat as an enemy as somebody who might actually be one who brings grace? Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to see where it goes. I'm not excited enough to buy an Xbox and play through the game. That would give me my answers, but...
Nor I. Yeah. I'm also, you know...
PlayStation.
There's 36 times in the Torah the commitment to love the stranger appears. Mm-hmm. And, you know, love the stranger, you know, at what cost to my own community. So I mentioned that teaching from Pirkei Avot, and right before it as, do not separate yourself from the community. So there's this also, like, you know, because once you do, you create factions. And you see these factions, which view each other as they're the enemy. Like the scarred... I don't know what their deal is. I mean, I kind of know what their deal is. Basically, they're like a cult. They had a prophet, and they think that they have the truth, and they hate everybody else. Mm. And they use bows and arrows, and they don't use guns. They use
It'll be really interesting to see the last episode for you on that.
Yeah. So, you know, once you separate from the community, then you get, like, these pockets of humanity that only view themselves as the actual humans. Everyone else is viewed as outsider.
I think one more thing that we've all had kind of a coming to on late. None of us saw it in the theaters, but Captain America: New World Order.
Yep.
Woo! Yeah.
There's Brave New World.
Oh, Brave New World.
The Brave New World?
Anyway.
Really?
Brave New World Order.
Is it New World Order? I think it's Brave New World, but it
doesn't matter.
We're
going to look it up, and then I'm going to set
Brave
up
New
that.
World? Brave New World.
Okay.
New World.
We're either going to keep this
something
in
about, like,
and show just how much it's stuck in our brains as to how great this is, or we're going to introduce again that we have all seen Captain America: Brave New World. Matthew was the first to claim it here. What have you noticed?
Oh, I thought it, I don't know. Maybe it was because I was tired from just grading midterms, or it did nothing for me. I found it to be boring. My bar for superhero films, to be honest, is pretty low. I just want amusement usually. And I wasn't even really amused by it. The dialogue was so drab. It was a horrendous underuse of Harrison Ford.
Love Giancarlo Esposito.
But he doesn't hardly do anything.
I was really worried that he was gone after like the first 10 minutes. And I'm going, yeah. What do you have Giancarlo Esposito here for?
But he's in everything.
Yeah, I mean, he is the villain.
He is the ace of the villain for this past 5 years.
I want to see him play a good guy.
If you have the streaming service Dropout, there's a show on there called Make Some Noise, which is an improv-based game show. During COVID, they invite him on to be a guest in the show, and he is so lovely and wonderful and generous with his talent. So he is truly not evil, but only he plays evil on TV.
That's the impression I have of him, is that he's actually a very delightful person. But
he's so good. He's in season, like, Once Upon a Time. He was in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. He was in The Mandalorian. He's in The Boys. He's in, like, so many great things that I'm watching lately. I just love seeing him on screen. We have Sonos speakers. He's the voice of the Sonos speaker system. He asks me, you know, what song I want to hear sometimes.
I guess there is something really compelling about, like, he does villains well.
Oh, my God. And he can go really, really low key. That was always the thing in Breaking Bad, is that he was the lowest key villain until he wasn't. And that one scene will just elevate everything else, but like, you know that it's brewing the whole time.
Yeah. So
maybe one day I'll watch Breaking Bad.
I mean, it's worth it. Better Call Saul, more worth it, but yeah.
I heard that's a great show. Was there anything in Captain America Brave New World that you thought touched upon any interesting or meaningful themes of religion or spirituality? I have one thing I noticed that I thought was interesting, but beyond that,
I think that's part of the reason I struggled with it, because it didn't feel to me like it had much to say. They just wanted to get to the Hulk, the Red Hulk.
It's,
and then
if they achieved it, is a different story. But I, you know, I also heard, like, well, again, of their villain, you know, and Isaiah character,
Isaiah both, Bradley,
yeah, who had both been so held back,
sure,
so mistreated, and yet were they able to find freedom within there? We're not talking about people who intentionally wanted to be destructive or intentionally wanted to be used as people of destruction, have found themselves so harmed that they turned into weapons. They were turned into weapons of mass destruction. Contrast that with the inner turmoil of the Red Hulk, who wanted to control his destructive tendencies so much, but really struggled with, you know, it felt like a deception for him to hide it.
Sure.
Now, maybe I'm reading a lot more into it than they actually got onto the screen. But, like, he wanted to deceive his ability to control, whereas the villains were the ones that had been forced into some of that work.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of the real villain. In this, Thunderbolt Ross is,
because
he's the one who, he creates the leader, who then winds up being able to manipulate him and turn him into the Red Hulk. Yeah, so it...
Never thought those leopards would eat my face.
But
I mean, he's not the villain in this movie, though.
No, but he's the one responsible for it all.
Oh, he is responsible?
Yeah, he's the one that's,
I think he's... I think they tried to make him a sympathetically responsible... Not the villain, but certainly he is... His past keeps catching up.
He's made those Anakin choices. You kind of see him trying to become Darth Vader at the end of the Return of the Jedi here, there's also this like subtext of looking weak in front of everyone if he admits his mistakes. So he's trying to sweep it all under the carpet and hide it.
And the leader makes him look out of control.
Yeah,
which is the complete opposite. He makes him look so powerful and so out of control. that he can't be trusted.
Yeah.
How could this be? And he voluntarily leaves office.
Yeah.
So in the end, he actually does take responsibility. Yep. So I say the end of the movie.
Yeah.
He does take responsibility for himself.
Yeah.
And that's at least somewhat redemptive. He's not intransigent. He's not holding on to his mistakes like he didn't make them. He fully acknowledges everything he did. And that's at least, you know, better than
too little,
not
too
having
late,
curious who actually is the vice president. Who is the president now in that scenario?
Giancarlo Esposito!
Sidewinder for president.
The thing that is really weird, the most criminally underused actor is Liv Tyler.
She's great.
Oh, yeah.
And
for 3 seconds.
I don't know if it was even her.
It was her.
Okay.
Not a CGI Liv Tyler.
Anyway.
That movie came out a very long time ago. Yeah. And she played Arwen over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's been a while. So we've all weird. Gotten older.
Yeah.
You know, she looks
except
her age.
For Liv
Tyler. But let her look her age.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, look, she's looking great. She's Liv Tyler. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then we talked a little bit about this earlier. You have this interesting should be interesting Israeli character.
Yes. Ruth Bat Seraph.
Yeah.
Ruth, daughter of a fiery serpent angel.
Yeah.
Which that's what a seraph is. And, you know, when we heard it was going to be a character included in this, you know, an Israeli superhero, how exciting, named Sabra, which is a cactus fruit that is seen as the epitome of the Israeli. Prickly on the outside, sweet and soft on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So Sabra, great name for an Israeli superhero. They were going to make her Israeli. Some hullabaloo. Palestinians were angry.
Yeah.
Israelis were angry, and then they included her as having an Israeli background, and then as former Black Widow, and then who cares?
Yeah.
It didn't make a lick of difference. Some blue striping on her clothing, uniform, etc., a nod to her comic book accurate costume. Sure. Was she badass? You bet she was.
Yeah.
Fantastic actress.
Yeah.
Underutilized.
It was really disappointing, I guess.
It was like pulling in from the comic books, but to no actual great effect. So, you know, ostensibly, who is Black Widow's sister? Who is the
Yelena.
Yelena ostensibly freed her as part of the post-Black Widow. She's one of those individuals who was freed. Yeah. They didn't say that, but, you know, former Black Widow,
that could have been,
it kind of implies.
That could have been interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the spiritual message you took from this?
I always think about, you know, the Yetzer inner turmoil that Thunderbolt Ross not Thunderbolt Ross was going through. You know, would he actually be able to, like Bruce did, control the Hulk by breathing and meditating? Isaiah Bradley, you know, going through, you know, the injustice of being essentially, you know, used by the government to be the post-Steve Rogers super soldier and then being put in jail to keep it quiet. And then, you know, vacillating, should I go to the White House after what they did to me for so many years? He decides to go and gets exploited again by somebody else, by the leader. You know, my goodness, man. The man could not get a break.
Yeah.
And but it was. I like seeing the character again.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting character.
I love the character. I felt I wanted more. And I wanted to see him flourishing or being Captain America. I wanted to see Isaiah Bradley as
We wanted an Isaiah Bradley TV show episode. It may not have been the driver for a full movie or any of that sort of stuff, but we wanted to see that section of not being mistreated the entire time.
I think they were also kind of sheepish about some of the race issues and things.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
It's implied, but they don't, you know, go... Yeah.
So. Not with more on Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Okay, and this gets to another issue with the MCU, I think. That so to really enjoy one of these things, I wind up going to Wikipedia.
Uh-huh.
I don't have time to watch the whole series.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, what was that? Or I pause it and I have this idea. Maybe Disney is listening. Don't think so. But I have this idea for geeks like me. They need to have this thing where you have like a split screen with the film. And then, like, if it's based on a comic, put the comic over here.
Yeah.
You can read and watch at the same time and go back and forth. Anyway,
what I've done is I rely upon some of the YouTube channels that I watch.
Okay.
I follow New Rock Stars and Screen Crush pretty avidly. And one of the things they do is give me the Cliff Notes summary before I go watch this, so I don't have to go and rewatch everything. And they'll bring all the pieces together, edited together for you as a pre-watching 15-minute video before you go see a certain movie.
Okay.
And so that's a nice thing that they do, is to help people who know they haven't seen everything at least get the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah.
Before you go, so you feel cued in. Yeah. So they do that public service.
Yeah.
And that's probably why they do it. Because, or you just saw it, but it's been 3 years. Yeah. I'm not going to rewatch everything. Right. Give me a refresher.
Come on now.
Yeah. Give me a refresher.
I did see with my wife this week Thunderbolts.
Okay, yeah.
And that was
on my list.
Very good. I highly recommend. Yeah.
I've heard good things.
It was much more emotionally, had a lot more emotional depth and I think spiritual themes than Captain America, Brave New World.
Let's try and see that, Travis, sometime soon.
I think
it's also, what an amazing cast of actors. Carolyn Pugh, the guy from Stranger Things, Sebastian Stan.
Yeah.
And other people.
But what a great cast.
And one of the screenwriters is, I'm going to get her name, Joanna Kahlo. She's one of the showrunners for The Bear.
I just watched all of The Bear.
I'll withhold my judgment simply because you didn't have to wait a year between seasons, but
episode one changed me.
Oh yeah.
Episode changed me.
That's a heck of a one to change.
Not sci-fi and fantasy, but cinematically unbelievable.
Yeah. But they bring some of that emotional resonance
that's good.
And so I didn't expect this. I thought this is gonna be like a fun shoot 'em up. I heard, it's funny, it's kinda like
Deadpool or something.
The Suicide Squad.
Oh yeah.
Not Suicide Squad, the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I heard it compared with both of them, and it's not, I see the, like, maybe plot-wise, there are certain parallels.
Oh, the B-list hero set? Yeah. Sure, I get that.
And people who are not, like, good people. Yeah. But
right.
They literally, the villain, to save somebody, they have to go into the darkness with them. That, I think, is amazing. Like
that sounds like Rabbi Nachman of Breslov all over
us. And I was thinking of inner healing ministries that we have in the Catholic world. Like it had a lot of resonance with reality, and that's why I appreciate it. But it was also a lot of fun.
I look forward to seeing it. I really do. Other thing I saw, I've been watching Murderbot on Apple TV. It's about a security robot who is able to remove his ability. The SEC unit removes his governance software. He's then able to act autonomously and do whatever he wants. And he calls himself Murderbot, even though he does not actually murder people. He actually finds himself drawn towards being a loyal protector of other humans. And he struggles with what it means to have autonomy with all that power. He's sort of like synthetic human / machine and circuitry. He's a cyborg.
Yeah. It's called
Murderbot. And, you know, he has a helmet that can cover his face and uncover his face. And the people he's assigned to prefer the mask off. He prefers the mask on because he can, like, hide his facial expressions more. Because if they realize he is autonomous, they will melt him down for parts. And he wants to be alive. He has the desire to be alive, to be a person. He loves soap operas. It's kind of a funny piece. He just watches thousands of hours on his inner eye of these ridiculous space soap operas. Cameoed by, like, people from Star Trek movies. It's very funny. So far, a good series on what it means to be human.
So it's like Pinocchio, but in a...
It is like Pinocchio. where the inhuman becomes a real boy.
Yeah.
And struggles with it, because if he gets caught, it's terrible for him. So he tries to hide. He has all the power. Like, he didn't lose any power or abilities. Mm. He also knows in his past that he did some pretty atrocious things when he was not acting with free will.
There's a common thread in, like, what we've been talking about, humanity.
Yeah, here. Humanity.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll add one more thing. So another thing, I watched Black Mirror Season 7, which I cannot recommend enough. Two in particular episodes. First one is called Common People. There's a couple. She is a teacher. He is a welder. They struggle to make ends meet. And she keeps getting headaches. Eventually, she simply passes out. And turns out she has, like, an inoperable tumor. And this new medical company comes in saying, we actually have, like, a way to, like, synthetically replace that part of the brain. And so they do it. But turns out it's actually, like, on a payment plan. So your brain functions as long as you stay within this zone.
Dude.
And you pay your monthly fee. And there's upgrades to have, like, it's the commodification of life itself.
Wow.
And at one point, I thought, oh my God, what do they make her have to, like, spew ads? And then they have her spewing ads.
What?
Wow. It was, I'm like, oh my God, so dystopian. So she's in class with a student, and the student's having a difficult time, and an ad promoting Christianity comes out.
Wow.
Have you tried Jesus Christ? Kid goes home, tells the parents, and she is fired. You can't do that in a public school setting. And she had no control over that thing. So she's given up her autonomy to let other people use her body as a speaker for just products as well as religion.
Wow.
And so at some point, they up the cost of the tiers and they have to go to the ad-based version. It's so bizarre.
Wow.
Great episode. Really, really interesting episode. Yeah. I will not tell you anything more about it, but it's about the commodification of human life itself. The other episode that was, I think, was The Peak, starring Paul Giamatti, it's great, called Eulogy. He plays Philip, who lets this cutting-edge AI system in his own photographic memories try to restore some past memories. And he has suppressed all memories of an ex-girlfriend. Like, they're all just like, they can't see her face, she's turned away, it's scratched out in his memories. And he, you know, and then the AI is like, don't you have anything of her? Oh, I have this one thing, but he like scratched on her face. And then he has like tons of stuff that he forgot he even had. He brings up more and more and more and more, trying just to see her face.
Yeah.
And in the end, well, I won't tell you the end, but basically because she has died, this is to make her immersive eulogy experience for those who are at the funeral. And so he actually, you know, can he actually even retrieve her face in his memory? Does he even want to? Very good episode. Really good. You know, basically he's like, he has the kind of like, he's become almost like living in exile in his own mind because he doesn't have all those memories. Or he's denying part of who he is or was. And he's sort of like living with a kind of internal exile from his fuller self. And, you know, if he can remember her, would it end that? If he does, would it not change anything? And, you know, so how it resolves, what will it change? It was a very, it'd be a great episode. Really, really, like, good as, like, a standalone anything. Just, you know, very, very interesting.
All right.
That's cool. So that's what we've been watching lately.
That is what we've been watching lately, yeah. All
right. So, news from the realms, what we're looking forward to. We've mentioned we're looking forward to the Fantastic Four movie. I'm looking forward to that. A lot.
Oh, yeah.
So many failed attempts at that in the past many years.
Yeah, I'm hoping they get it right this time.
I'm hoping the tone looks right. The cast looks good. Ben Grimm, classically Jewish character, being played by a Jewish actor. That's always nice to see. Looking forward to that. Superman by James Gunn. I saw the trailers and was taken back to my childhood. I saw the Chris Reeve one in theaters.
We were in the theater together.
Then they brought back the dog. Really, I remember as a kid that there was like a dog, a horse, and a monkey.
Oh, yeah.
There's all these other, like a Kryptonian
the
zoo.
The super pets,
yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exciting. And, you know, Rachel Brosnahan as Lois Lane, Miss Maisel. I think she'll be great. You know, that very quick, snappy, you know, bright. You know, reporter vibe. He looks great. He's also Jewish. So nice to have like Superman being played by a Jewish actor because the creators were Jewish. And of course, Superman is of course very much like a Jesus Moses mashup. I mean, you know, he's Moses in the sense that he is from a doomed world put into a very tiny little basket, then put down not the Nile, but like across the galaxy. And then adopted by not Pharaoh's daughter, but by the Kents.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very classic Moses-esque story. And then so often the hero grows up hidden.
Yeah.
And then the hero emerges from the cave, as it were. Moses leaving the palace. Or many, many heroes just sort of like grow up unknown and then they emerge on the scene ready to then save the world.
Is the L in their names like
absolutely?
You think it's from God L?
Kal-El, the voice of God.
Yeah.
Or God Light.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Metaphor for Christianity. I totally get it. But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I really am. I've seen all the movies, and I'm looking forward to a new version. I trust James Gunn. You know, with getting the right tone, not too seriously, but kind of serious. Mm-hmm. And then Tron: Ares is coming out. Tron, a deeply religious-themed sci-fi film from 81?
Really, wow, that's early, that old.
It is really old. It's early 80s. We had Tron on VHS, and my brother and I watched it easily 100 times.
82.
Wow.
It was early, early CGI. Those light cycles were very cool.
It was released a week before I was born.
Wow. I like the sequel quite a bit, and I'm looking forward to Tron: Ares, where basically the computer world invades our world. It looks very apocalyptic. I'm excited.
Well, and I got one more thing. I mean, it'll pop up at other points. But one that's been kind of going for me lately is the band 21 Pilots. And 10 years ago, they were dominating the radio with a couple of hits, Stressed Out and Ride and stuff like that. But it turns out that album called Blurry Face was starting a story about mental health, about anxiety and stresses and things like that. And it used this fantasy world that the singer created to tell that story while also being good music. It's been really good, and it's been ramping up. Last year they released what they said was going to be the last album of it, and now they're actually releasing what is the real last album of it, maybe. And but they do this with this fantasy world, this other, you know, this imagined world that comes out of it. And so it's been really interesting. Like, fandom takes a lot of different shapes. You know, people get into Marvel, people get into Star Wars, and yet there are a lot of people who get into 21 Pilots and the lore that they've created and everything like that. So I've been following it like crazy. It's all over, you know, their social media, but the story that they tell gets really deep, and I've been appreciating it. If you're looking for one piece that would help tell it, there's this song called Paladin Straight that has an amazing music video that is filled with like epic battle scenes and like climbing a tower and facing stuff. And it's definitely worth, you know, it certainly like fits within that genre of storytelling.
That's so fascinating that it's a multi album fantasy cycle told through music.
It's like a concept album, but like concept albums.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. And it's been really interesting to see where it has gone so far. The concerts have been important too. So yeah, Trench has been really good, and Clancy is the latest one. Clancy, just a friend of mine, listened to it for the actual music, and he really particularly enjoyed it. It has one of my favorite songs on it. So yeah.
You get the story, or the fantasy world, by just listening to the albums, or is it the videos?
The albums have a lot of the story.
Okay.
And the videos and other writings that go along with just enhance it even more. So again, fandom,
they're
that,
creating
that
a
expands
universe.
It. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And our last segment from the Geniza, Matthew had something from the storehouses of writings of the days of our youth and that are still worth looking at and talking about, maybe even getting back to.
Yeah, so I was thinking, there's this weird phenomenon from my childhood. I remember going to the Christian bookstore in North Park Mall in Joplin, Missouri, with my parents, and seeing these books by a guy named Stephen Lawhead, and they got my attention. I actually wanted to read them when I was a kid, but never got to, and so I've gone back. I was anticipating that these would be crummy, ideologically heavy, a glorified fantasy world trying to convert you, and it's not that. He's really trying to produce literature. This is his first novel I'm reading. It's called In the Halls of the Dragon King. I would say it's a first novel, so it's kind of mediocre, but I'm giving it a chance and I'm actually enjoying it. And it does some interesting things with religion. I think that's how it got marketed as a Christian fantasy novel, is because it does have this story of how would the creator God reveal himself in a fantasy world where there are all these different, like, pagan religions, basically.
question about fantasy world.
This is what's interesting. I expected it to be like, okay, this is just like complete falsehood. But it's treated more like they were first runs at religion. Incomplete.
Another lower level deities?
And they would be false in the sense that they're not actually gods.
What are they?
I haven't gotten that far.
Okay, so they're real.
There are spirits, yeah.
So some kind of like non-human entities.
It's like angels and demons, and as what we would call them. That's not the language that they're using. He's trying really hard to create, like, well, what would this look like in a fantasy world without the Judeo-Christian universe? But definitely still operating from a Christian worldview. So the story is basically about a necromancer who kidnaps the king. And so the plot is the heroes have to rescue him from the dungeon. The real hero of the story is an acolyte of this god named Ariel. It's an interesting name that they pick. He makes this choice to leave the monastery to take a message to the queen, knowing that he will not be able to ever come back. So he will never be a priest. He'll never be a priest
of one of these older pagan religions.
But he finds himself in encountering this hermit who's living out in the woods.
The hero meets a wise old man?
Yeah. It's a,
I am shocked.
Oh, the archetypes, like, it's all like...
This is 40 years ago. Hold on. It might have been a shock then.
Fair.
It's fantasy. No. It's kind of like
Luke,
fantasy by the numbers.
Yeah.
But the hermit also left that monastery, but he's
so
now
the
a...
the same monastic order, not unlike a Jedi?
But the hermit is now a devotee of the... God who has no name.
The creator God.
Yeah. But he's not like this weird, creepy zealot, you know. He's very gentle and like, you've been prepared. And this God has been trying to, like, there's a lot about dreams, prophecies.
Sure.
So he's been leaving little breadcrumbs that are...
Trying to break through the barrier, as it were, between the creator God and humanity. A lot of the early Abraham Midrash. You know, how does Abraham become monotheist?
Yep.
The rabbis. Their take is that Abraham, on a very intuitive level, just sees that how could the world not have a creator? So it's very like inductive philosophy.
Interesting.
For Abraham, God the creator is perceived just through observing the natural world.
Yeah.
So, and that is one of the classic answers in Judaism is revelation comes through the natural world.
Yep.
I would say revealed wisdom. Both are important pathways to knowing God. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Tell us the name again.
Stephen Lawhead.
Is there a name for the whole series?
The Dragon King trilogy. I'm enjoying it. It's better than Captain America: Brave New World.
Okay.
It's not a high bar.
All right. So. That concludes this episode of Sacred Realms, What's Happening in the Realms. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this conversation about the nexus of sci-fi, fantasy, religion, and spirituality, and come back to hear more. If you like this episode, please leave us a positive review or rating on the Apple Podcast app or wherever you prefer to find your podcast. You can reach us with questions, comments, and suggestions at sacredrealmspodcast@gmail.com. Keep exploring the sacred and the realms.